It's nearly 12 o'clock and time for the KMXT Midday Report. Thank you for listening to KMXT. On 100.1 FM, it's your public radio station. Broadcasting from Signal Hill here in Kodiak, Alaska, where we have overcast skies, 48 degrees out at the airport, 52 on our tiny porch behind the station, and sail drones seem to think it's 49. We are looking for isolated showers before 1 p.m. Cloudy skies becoming mostly sunny gradually, with a high near 56 today. Isolated showers after 4 a.m. tonight. Partly cloudy skies tonight with a low about 44. West wind could gust as high as 25 today and tonight. For tomorrow, showers likely mainly between 7 a.m. and 10 a.m., then rain after 10 a.m., and that rain is expected to become heavy tomorrow night. Coming up on the Midday Report, the legislative special session is scheduled to end today, and it seems like a lot of balls are still up in the air. The number of patients in Alaska hospitalized with COVID has hit another new record. And Alaska health officials say the Mu virus does not appear to be spreading in the state, at least not now. No stories after this.
Live from NPR News, I'm Lakshmi Singh. Senior American intelligence officials say al-Qaeda will likely build the capacity to threaten the U.S. homeland from Afghanistan within the next 2 years. NPR's Ryan Lucas says the assessment follows the Taliban's takeover after the U.S. withdrew.
That projected 1 to 2 year timeline for al-Qaeda to reconstitute in Afghanistan and develop the capability to threaten the U.S. is conservative, according to top officials from the Defense Intelligence Agency and the CIA. One of those officials, CIA Deputy Director David Cohen, says the agency has already seen some indications of al-Qaeda moving to Afghanistan. The country served as a safe haven for al-Qaeda the last time the Taliban were in power in the 1990s, up through the U.S. invasion following 9/11. The U.S. withdrawal from Afghanistan has complicated efforts to combat terrorist groups inside the country, but officials say they remain focused on countering the threat. Ryan Lucas, NPR News, Washington.
Millions of California voters are deciding whether Governor Gavin Newsom gets to keep his job. The recall election was propelled by growing frustration with COVID-19 restrictions that Newsom defended as life-saving, but critics argued undercut millions of working Americans. Former President Donald Trump and other Republicans have charged that the only way Newsom stays in office is if the election's rigged. Cap Radio's Chris Nichols says that sort of interference is unlikely.
Elections in California, just like across the country, they're decentralized. They're run by local election officials, and that it would be almost impossible to have them all secretly get together to rig an election, given the decentralized nature of how elections are operated in California.
Chris Nichols reporting. As Tropical Storm Nicholas batters the Texas coast, people in Louisiana are preparing yet again for severe weather just weeks after Hurricane Ida struck the state. From member station WRKF, Paul Braun has more.
People in Louisiana can expect heavy rains, tropical storm force winds along the coast, and flash flooding. Louisiana Governor John Bel Edwards urged people all across the state to take the storm seriously.
Because we're not in the posture that we would like to be before a storm. We're still responding to the previous one in southeast Louisiana, Ida. And we know that southwest Louisiana remains compromised as well from Laura and Delta last year and the May floods this year.
Edwards says a federal disaster declaration issued Monday will allow the state to move search and rescue teams into place ahead of the storm. For NPR News, I'm Paul Braun in Baton Rouge.
Saturday Night Live alum Norm Macdonald has died. His manager, Mark Gervitz, confirms a Canadian actor's death following 9 years of dealing privately with cancer. Macdonald was an SNL cast member in the mid-1990s. Fans loved him for his laconic delivery in stand-up, on film, and on television, especially as the anchor of SNL's popular faux news segment, The Weekend Update. Norm Macdonald was 61 years old. This is NPR News.
NPR News is brought to you in part by Providence Kodiak Island Counseling Center. For an appointment or more information, 481-2400.
Today, the Kodiak Emergency Operations Center reported 24 new cases of COVID-19 for the Kodiak Island Borough. 11 cases are close contacts of previously reported cases, 12 cases are classified as community spread, and one case is travel-related. 112 cases are currently classified as active locally. There are two active cases currently hospitalized in Kodiak. 1,768 cases, 74 local hospitalizations, and 7 deaths are now officially associated with COVID-19 for the Kodiak Island Borough. A mask mandate is in effect for public indoor activities. Residents are encouraged to stay home if ill, even if you have mild symptoms. Please keep your distance from others whenever possible, and wear masks where appropriate. The legislative special session is scheduled to end today, and several items are not resolved, including a bill setting the amount of this year's Alaska Permanent Fund dividend and another bill to set future PFDs. The Senate Finance Committee is considering a bill that would fund permanent fund dividends at $1,100 this year. However, Governor Mike Dunleavy's administration has said that nearly half that money isn't available. The governor has called for dividends to be more than double that size and to pay for them by drawing more than planned from the permanent fund earnings. Even that amount is less than what some Alaskans who provided testimony on the bill want. They want the state to pay dividends under the formula in a 1982 state law. That would be roughly $3,800.
You know, I expect to get my whole dividend, not you take it and do what you think is better for it. Than what I can do with my own money. If you don't want to do that, you can give us back our mineral rights to all our property.
The Senate Finance Committee also discussed a bill that would set dividends in the long term. That bill would scale up dividends from $1,100 to $1,300 over the next 3 years. Then it would make dividends equal to half the annual draw, which currently would be about $2,350. The Alaska Permanent Fund Corporation Board has said the state should not spend more than 5% of the fund's value each year. Larger dividends would require drawing more than that level, unless the state offset the money with either taxes or spending cuts. Corporation Executive Director Angela Rodell says it becomes harder to invest the fund's money when the corporation doesn't know how much the state will spend from the fund earnings each year.
You're taking money out of some of the highest, best performing assets of the fund and putting them into lower risk, lower returning assets.
But the larger amount would depend on agreeing to add new annual taxes or other revenue totaling $700 million. If that doesn't happen, dividends would grow from a $1,300 based on inflation. In other news, work stopped on a bill requested by Dunleavy to ease the burden on hospitals from the COVID-19 surge by temporarily scaling back regulations and increasing access to telehealth care. The bill became caught up in a dispute over requiring all hospitals to allow any patients to bring a person who supports them during any treatment. The Coast Guard encountered a flotilla of Chinese warships 46 miles off the Aleutian Islands at the end of August, inside the U.S. Economic Exclusion Zone, according to a news release Monday evening. The four ships included a guided missile cruiser, a guided missile destroyer, a general intelligence vehicle, and an auxiliary vessel, said the Coast Guard's release. The Coast Guard said no interaction occurred between the Chinese vessels and the American Coast Guard or American fishing vessels. It said the Chinese vessels have right of passage through the economic exclusion zone and were in full compliance with international maritime law. Scott McCann, a Coast Guard spokesperson, would not speculate on the reason for the Chinese warship's visit when asked Tuesday evening. He said it's been several years since the Chinese warships last entered the Alaska EEZ. The Coast Guard encountered the vessels with the Bertoff and Kimball Legend-class national security cutters and the Healy, a medium icebreaker. The number of patients in Alaska hospitalized with COVID-19 rose again over the weekend, setting another new record. By Monday, State Health Department reported 210 COVID patients in Alaska hospitals, 33 of them on ventilators. All of Anchorage's adult ICU beds were listed as full Monday afternoon. And according to the New York Times, Alaska ranked second in the nation for the greatest increase in COVID-19 hospitalizations over the past 2 weeks, behind just North Dakota. The state health department also reported on Monday that another Alaskan had recently died from COVID-19. That man was from Anchorage and age 80 or older. The state said he is the 445th Alaskan to die from COVID-19 since the pandemic began. In addition, Fairbanks Memorial Hospital reported that two of its patients had recently died from COVID, one 58 years old and the other 66. Those deaths are not yet included in the state's data. The health department also tallied 810 new coronavirus cases on Friday, plus another 663 new infections over the weekend. Meanwhile, the percent of COVID-19 tests coming back positive in Alaska continues to rise. Over the past week, the averaged percentage of daily positive tests was just over 9%. The Centers for Disease Control and Prevention considers 5% to be too high. Alaska health officials say the Mu variant of the virus that causes COVID-19 does not appear to be spreading in the state. Jamie Parker at the Alaska Department of Health and Social Services said last week that Mu first showed up in Alaska early May.
We did have a lot of cases of Mu since May, but we've seen a really sharp decline since Delta's moved in.
Mu has caught the attention of the world's virus trackers because its mutations might be able to evade immunity gained through vaccination and prior infection. But in Alaska and other states, Mu appears to be crowded out by the highly contagious Delta variant. In all, Alaska has recorded 147 cases of Mu. Nearly all of them were in May, June, and July. A national fast food chain and a rural interior business have teamed up for some online fun and cross-promotion. KUAC's Dan Bross has this report.
A recent Jack in the Box restaurant produced YouTube video poses the question,
can you own chicken? Let's do a little search here. Okay, there we go. Huh, what's this? Chicken Alaska?
Hi, I'm Chicken Sue, and this is my son Max.
And welcome to Chicken Alaska.
Susan Wyron and her son Max own and operate the Chicken Creek Saloon, Cafe, Mercantile, and Cabins on the Taylor Highway east of Tok. Wyron says Jack in the Box approached them with the idea of a promotional video about the fast food chain buying chicken.
It was kind of fun, a kind of fun thing, and we decided to do it, sure.
Hello?
Max and Sue, it's Jack from Jack in the Box. Bottom line, I want to buy Chicken Alaska from you so I can end these chicken wars and just own chicken.
Chicken wars?
That's right.
Okay, Jack.
In the video, the Wyrons agree to sell Chicken Alaska for 10,000 Jack in the Box chicken sandwiches.
I can't believe that worked. Okay, great. Thanks. Wow, I own chicken.
They didn't really buy us. It's just kind of a silly idea. Apparently, they have silly ads. Jack wanted to end the chicken wars, and by owning Chicken Alaska, he'd be like the king, I guess. I don't know. You know, we went along with it because we figured, why not? What a great way to get some piggyback advertising, you know?
Wyron says the online promotion came along as Chicken suffered through a second slow season due to the Poker Creek Alaska-Yukon border crossing remaining closed.
Because Chicken is so far out, we're kind of in the Dawson City Yukon territory loop, the Klondike loop it's called. We just have not had much business.
Wyron says they weren't paid anything to do the promotion, but Jack in the Box did hire a family friend to shoot the video and chicken, and the fast food chain has pledged to donate $10,000 to Tok EMS to support Chicken's ambulance service. In Fairbanks, I'm Dan Bross.
Evacuees from Afghanistan will soon be making Alaska their home. Catholic Social Services of Alaska says its Refugee Resettlement Division is preparing to welcome 50 to 100 Afghans beginning this month. They were among the thousands of people the U.S. military evacuated from the country since the Taliban took control in August. Catholic Social Services says the evacuees will stay at military bases in the lower 48 until they're ready to move north. The agency says those coming to Alaska include vulnerable populations and people who worked for the U.S. forces in Afghanistan. Catholic Social Services of Alaska's Refugee Assistance Program is soliciting volunteers to welcome the new arrivals and help them settle in. Alaska's redistricting board recently drew new political boundaries that place Southeast's four sitting House members within two districts. That's because the new maps put two lawmakers' homes in different districts than they're currently in, one in one case by less than a few hundred yards. That means that unless they want to move, Democratic and Independent House members would have to run against each other. And Coast Alaska's Jacob Resnick reports the Republican majority panel's plan is not final and will be coming under scrutiny this fall.
There was some relief when the draft redistricting maps were published last week because the size of Southeast's political delegation remained the same, four House members and two state senators for next year's election. U.S. Census data shows Southeast communities have either had very modest growth or lost population, while other parts of the state grew relatively quickly. The last go-around, Southeast lost a senator and a House member, which diminished its voice in the legislature. Representative Andy Story is a Democrat now in her second term, representing Juneau's Mendenhall Valley. But the new maps would put her four-bedroom house in a neighboring district that's held by a party ally.
To me, it is really suspect. One half of the street, my side, would be in the new downtown district, and the other half of the street would stay in the current district.
It's normal for political boundaries to be redrawn every 10 years to follow trends with population shifts. But Representative Sarah Hannon, also a Juneau Democrat, says the new lines on the map look deliberate.
It's a funny little carve-out because the neighborhood that her house is in has two sides of the street, and they took only one side of the street.
The draft maps also divide Ketchikan in a novel way. A zigzag line excludes Ketchikan Independent Dan Ortez's three-bedroom home on South Tongass Highway. That would land him in a sprawling 630-mile outer coastal district that would run from the Canadian border all the way up to Yakutat, in territory that's largely represented now by Sitka Democratic Representative Jonathan Kreis Tompkins. The Alaska Redistricting Board put out a statement saying there had been some errors in the Ketchikan Gateway Borough that would be addressed when it reconvenes later this week. Representative Dan Ortez says that gives him some hope.
It's my understanding that the Redistricting Board has called that an error and that they intend to correct that error at this upcoming meeting on Friday. That's my understanding.
Alaska's constitution says district boundaries should be compact territory that's an integrated socio-economic area. But Ortez says carving out the predominantly Alaska Native city of Saxman and the outskirts south of Ketchikan could lump these voters with a representative that might be hundreds of miles away.
It's very problematic. It puts part of South Tongass and part of Saxman as a part of the West Coast district that goes all the way up to Yakutat, and, you know, that's just not in the best interests of the people who live on Revillagigedo Island, let's put it that way.
Veteran Republicans involved in the redistricting process say shifting demographics made the new districts inevitable. Former state Republican Chairman Randy Riedrich fronts a group calling itself Alaskans for Fair and Equitable Redistricting.
There just wasn't enough population south of Juneau to build two districts under any shape. So we had to create the map that I was working on, we had to arrange to import Yakutat population from the north.
He says there wasn't any deliberate effort to exclude incumbents, but Riedrich says it made sense to carve out the city of Saxman from the Ketchikan district and include it with other Alaska Native communities to the northwest.
I haven't even thought about who lives where, but we did carve out, in our using that term, we did select Saxman to be in the coastal district since it has most of the other Alaska Native villages, and it has Sitka, which is the center of many of their services. I thought he was justified to include it in the Maritime District.
These maps are only drafts, and the courts often get involved following legal challenges. But it's shaping up to be an opening of a high-stakes political exercise that will play out through the November 10th deadline to settle political boundaries. Representative Andy Story, the Juneau Democrat, says this process is too political. Three of the five members on the redistricting board are registered Republicans.
My situation right now, trying to understand it, it's probably a good reason for why we should have a nonpartisan redistricting board.
If the current maps are allowed to stand, it would shake up the political landscape in Southeast by forcing political allies to either contest each other in the 2022 election or uproot themselves. Representative Sarah Hannon says that's a tall order for part-time legislators.
I am not a politically committed enough public servant to move to continue to represent a district.
Which cynics might say could be exactly the point. Reporting in Juneau, I'm Jacob Resnick.
This is Alaska Fish Radio. I'm Lainey Welch. Strong demand keeps halibut prices high. More after this.
Grundon's Deck Boss 15-inch boots feature a protective toe cap, uppers that won't crack, and compression-molded rubber outsoles for better traction on wet decks. Made in USA.
As with other premium seafoods, halibut is seeing sustained high prices for fishermen as customer demand remains strong. Dock prices remain at over $6 a pound, topping $7 at major ports. The word that describes current inventories for fresh fish is short, says Rochelle Ryerson of global supplier TradeX.
As mid-August saw the crossover of the harvest passing 50% of the fishery limit, it also saw the transition of some processors making the switch from fresh to frozen production. Make no mistake, though, that the fresh market is still extremely strong, and as consumer demand continues to drain any available inventories, supply is inevitably short and prices continued their upward trend.
The total commercial catch for Pacific halibut this year was set at 25.7 million pounds for the U.S. and British Columbia. Alaska always gets the largest share, and this year's catch was set at just under 19 million pounds. About 70% of the Alaska halibut has been landed so far. Retail prices for fresh halibut were all over the place, with Whole Foods and Kroger stores featuring fillets at $23.66 a pound. 10th and M in Anchorage has fillets on its shelves at $27.95 and at $37.99 a pound at Pike Place Market in Seattle. Trade data show that so far this year, the U.S. has imported 10.3 million pounds of Atlantic halibut from eastern Canada, valued at nearly $77 million. The Pacific halibut season for this year was extended by 1 month, running from March 6th to December 7th. Stakeholders will get a first glimpse at what next year's halibut catches could be at the interim meeting of the International Pacific Halibut Commission, which will be held remotely on November 30th and December 1st. Fish Radio is also brought to you by OBI Seafoods. In Kodiak, I'm Lainey Welch.
This is the Island Messenger, a look at personal messages, the weather, and community announcements.
Hello, this is the Alaska Department of Fish and Game in Kodiak with Kodiak Commercial Salmon Fishery Advisory Announcement Number 51, date issued 10 a.m. on September 13th. The following areas will open to commercial salmon fishing for 78 hours from noon Wednesday, September 15th, until 6 p.m. Saturday, September 18th. The Outer Iqaluk section of the Southwest Kodiak District, the Humpy Deadman section of the Alitak District, the East Side Kodiak District, the Northeast Kodiak District, the Southeast of Fognak, Raspberry Straits, Southwest of Fognak, Northwest of Fognak, Shuyak Island, Paul's Bay, Paranosa Bay, Northeast of Fognak, and Duck Bay sections of the Fognak District, the Mainland District, and the Anton Larsen, Sheratine Bay, Kajuyak Bay, Terror Bay, Inner Uganic Bay, Spiridon Bay, Zacher Bay, and Uyak Bay sections of the Northwest Kodiak District. As previously announced, the following areas remain open to commercial salmon fishing until further notice. The Sturgeon, Halibut Bay, and Outer Karluk sections of the Southwest Kodiak District, Central and North Cape sections of the Northwest Kodiak District, and the Cape Alitak, Alitak Bay, Mosier Bay, and Olga Bay sections of the Alitak District, and the Iqaluk and Outer Katoy Bay sections of the Fognak District. Until further notice, in that portion of the northwest and southwest Kodiak District, south of the latitude of Cape Kuliuk, king salmon 28 inches or greater in length may not be retained by purse gear in the commercial fishery and must be returned to the water unharmed. Other closed waters are shown in the Kodiak Area Salmon Statistical Chart and detailed in commercial salmon fishing regulations and statistical charts. Harvest strategies and commercial salmon fishing regulations are available at the Kodiak Fish and Game Office. And, of course, the most recent salmon fishery information may be obtained by calling the department's 24-hour record a phone at 486-4559. Thank you very much. Good luck fishing. This is the Alaska Department of Fish and Game.
Kodiak Public Health invites community members over the age of 12 to a COVID-19 vaccine clinic on Thursday, September 16th from 3:30 to 7:30 p.m. at the Kodiak High School. The clinic will be in the auditorium foyer, and the Pfizer vaccine will be available. The high school is located at 722 Mill Bay Road. Let's bounce back from COVID-19. This message brought to you by the Department of Health and Social Services. Is it foyer or foyer? We have a personal message today to the main crew in Onion Bay, Brian, Brenton, and Eric. Beautiful summer day, cleaning up the pool. Boys are loving their new school. Hope you're getting a lot accomplished and have time for some R&R. Be safe. Love, Mom, Erica, Lycan, and Carter. Again, that's to the main crew in Onion Bay, Brian, Brenton, and Eric. Don't worry, the beautiful day is coming back. 48 degrees, overcast skies, and we are looking for those skies to gradually become mostly sunny this afternoon with a high near 56, west wind gusting to 30 today, and up to 25 tonight. And we're supposed to have isolated showers overnight tonight, partly cloudy skies, and those cloudy skies are going to really cloud up tomorrow. We're looking for showers turning to rain tomorrow and heavy rain tomorrow night. Today is Tuesday, the 14th day of September, the year 2021. The sun rose today at 7:38. It will set again at 8:29. That will give us 12 hours and 51 minutes of daylight, a loss of 4 minutes and 55 seconds compared to yesterday. Our record high for this date was 73, set in 2018, and our record low is 35, set in 1972. Looking at our local tides, we do have a low tide coming up here on the east side at 1:57 p.m., followed by a high tide at 8:29 p.m. of 8.5 feet. Over on the west side, that low tide will happen at 2:41 this afternoon at 5.6 feet, and your next high tide will be at 8:57 this evening and be 12.5 feet. Mariners, we do have a gale warning for Wednesday for Marmot Island to Sitka Neck, Kodiak's east side offshore. Southwest 30 right now, seas to 10 feet. For tomorrow, south 20, becoming southeast 35 in the afternoon, seas to 8 feet. And for Wednesday night, south 35, seas back up to 10 feet. In the Shelikof, small craft advisory through Wednesday, southwest 30, seas to 11 feet in the Shelikof today. For tonight, southwest 30 should diminish to 20 knots after midnight, seas to 10 feet, subsiding to 5 feet after midnight. And for tomorrow in the Shelikof, south winds to 15 knots, turning to the east, going to 25 knots tomorrow afternoon, seas to 5 feet. For Wednesday night, east 30, seas to 6 feet in the Shelikof. The City of Kodiak and the Kodiak Island Borough Cooperative Relations Committee will hold a meeting tomorrow. That's happening at 4 p.m. in the Kodiak Public Library's multi-purpose room. The meeting's open to the public, and for meeting packets, go to the City of Kodiak website. For more information, give them a call at 486-8636. The Borough's Planning and Zoning Commission will also be holding a regular meeting tomorrow in the Borough Assembly Chambers. That's happening at 6:30. The cases in this meeting being discussed are Brecken's vacation and relocation, Magic's variance, and Canna's variance. The public is welcome to come and express their thoughts with the commission regarding these cases. Again, that's the Borough Planning and Zoning. Tomorrow, Assembly Chambers, 6:30 p.m. You can sign up now for the Zoom event with graphic novel artists Demi Macheras and Casey Silver. That's going to be held Tuesday, September 21st, sponsored by the Kodiak Public Library in Canna. This special graphic novel event features interactive Indigenous Alaska storytelling with a contemporary twist, highlighting their new graphic novel Chickaloonies. The first 10 teens or tweens to register for this event will take home a signed copy of Chickaloonies. Contact Ani at the library for more information at 486-8686.
Listen for the Island Messenger here on Public Radio KMXT 3 times a day, Monday through Friday at 9 a.m., during the Midday Report at 12:20, and in the evening at 7 o'clock. If you have a community announcement or personal message, including lost and found items or pets, you can call KMXT at 486-3181, fax us at 486-2733, or email psa@kmxt.org.